We have three cases scheduled for argument. We understand counsel in those cases have announced ready and declared the amount of time that you wish to take for your arguments, and understand we had scheduled the third case to go first because of the circumstances came up. So we'll call that case now. Eric Maddox versus the state.
Clancy. Good morning. May it please the court. This is a case in which there was a probation revocation in front of Judge Sharon Wilson. There was a mix-up as to whether it was the first petition or the second petition. They ended up going on the first petition, even though the attorney said he was not prepared. And page 8 of the trial transcript, he admits he's not prepared to go. It's obvious from the warnings given to the defendant, he didn't understand the importance of pleading not true to all of the allegations.
But wasn't he saying he wasn't prepared to go on the second amended petition, which had just been filed that morning?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Wasn't he saying he wasn't prepared to go on the second amended petition, which had just been filed that morning?
He did.
But he was ready to go on the first amended petition.
I'm not sure he made that clear. He just said he wasn't prepared. I'm not sure if he was not prepared for the first or the second. However, it's clear that the client wasn't fully informed of the import of what he was about to do. And even Judge Wilson had to go back over it with him and make sure he understood what he was doing. Our position is that there was no evidence to prove that he possessed methamphetamine. Ms. Petty, on page 80 of the transcript, states that MDMA or methamphetamine is not a dilutant or adulterant of MDMA. So therefore, there really is no evidence of methamphetamine. And in Collin County, he was charged with methamphetamine, but at the time of the plea, it ended up being changed to what it was, ecstasy, MDMA. So he was revoked on the wrong grounds because MDMA was the reason he was stopped in what he pled to in Collin County, which was after, of course, this revocation. The the plea of true to one count in a contested revocation hearing is ineffective assistance of counsel. In our position, is that Judge Wilson is not known to be lenient, and the state argues, well, the reason might be for looking for her leniency. You have to consider whose court you're in and what the judge's background is and the judge's reputation and the judge's sentencings. And I feel like it's incompetent and ineffective to go open to Judge Wilson. He had a plea bargain of 15 years. He should have been counseled regarding that. He should have been counseled that he could have gotten anywhere from 5 to life. And I'm not sure he fully understood the import of pleading to that one THC count. If he had not pled to that, there'd be absolutely no evidence at all to support a revocation. The hearsay evidence of failing to report was not properly introduced by way of business records. The MDMA was not proven correctly. It was proved up as methamphetamine. And finally, the attorney did admit that he was not prepared. And it is clear from the warnings given by Sharon Wilson that he was not properly admonished as to the import of pleading guilty or pleading true to that. I'm not sure what the defense attorney counseled with him, but he said that he was not prepared at the very beginning, so I assume that that would show that that is ineffective assistance of counsel. And based on the fact that, one, there was no proof of the methamphetamine, that he was denied effective assistance of counsel, and that there was no proof that he did not report. And secondly, that there's such a mix-up between the first amended and then the judgment, which purports to be the second amended. Yes, you could go back non-pro-tunk and do that, but you can't non-pro-tunk the fact that it was not methamphetamine, it was MDMA. And therefore, we request the court to reverse this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Dehoney.
May it please the court, and may I first say thank you for moving us up. That the investigator that we lost this week was one of our misdemeanor investigators, so we appreciate that, your help on that. My name is Tanya Dehoney. I represent the state in this case. I have two housekeeping things that I'd like to take care of first. In my brief, I cited two pretty recent cases that were no petition history, and those have since gained petition history. One is the Delgadillo case, and that is a petition filed September 30th. And then Dickey is a no petition. So those have been resolved as far as the no petition history. You know, and then I want to say something else that doesn't go to the merits. I've practiced before this court a long time. I tend to be pretty strong on the facts, but not typically strident as far as my brief with my discussion of the defense briefing. And I was in this case, and I thought about that long and hard, and I recalled a case years ago where an unnamed defense counsel in the county had filed a brief saying there was an invalid deadly weapon finding, and there was no invalid or there was no deadly weapon finding. And so it's frustrating sometimes when you get a brief, and it doesn't happen that often, where you think, wait a minute, where are the facts and the law in this case? And so in thinking about that, I didn't throw elbows about rules against appellate procedure that were not followed on the table of contents or other places. Although you will need it, that the Melton case that they rely on the MDMA issue, the page site is 339, not 399. But when it comes to a situation where you're faced with completely either missing the boat or making statements where the case law is completely the opposite, it's a concern. And I'm reminded of my former boss in the appellate section who said, never apologize for relying on the letter of law. And so that was the spirit that this brief was written. Now, what happened in this case? We are looking at someone who had already committed a controlled substance offense, been given 7 years deferred in the very tough Sharon Wilson court, and went for a number of years, quite frankly. If you look at the allegations, he went for a number of years with basically piddly violations. And you'll see that the probation department didn't do anything about those failure to reports that were early on. But in 2007, this defendant started to backslide on the drugs. And you see a whole handful of violations coming up from May till November on that case. And he had dirty UAs, and he had possession of different types of contraband. And as is often shown in court opinions, like my Brewer case, the state gets one petition filed, and then they find out about another allegation, or they pull that evidence together, and they're not going to allege it until they have that evidence, and so they file an amendment. And in this situation, we're looking at a case, and I believe Judge Sharon Wilson said on the record, a whole slew of paperwork over a short amount of time, but we had three separate petitions filed, one in November, one in December, and one in January on the day of the hearing, and untimely, frankly. Now, I had to ultimately graph out what the different allegations were. The first petition, we can pretty much ignore for our purposes, but it had four issues. Then in came the new positive UA on the THC charge. That was the November 07. That's the one that this defendant pled true to, which is a controlling fact in this case, and really ignored by the defense. And that was slid into the middle, so it realigned the numbers of the charges or the violations on the first amended petition. So you have the same one that's violation one across all three petitions, and then they start to bump down and you change. And when we get to the one that was filed the day of the hearing, which really we don't have to worry about too much, although that is what the judgment says was adjudicated, but that one included another new violation, and it slid into the middle, too, so the numbers get all whoppy-jawed. So looking, if you chart it out, looking at the First Amendment petition and what the judge said on the record, what she did in that hearing, and let me say the word mix-up was used. There was no mix-up in this case as far as what was going on. The state had filed something new and untimely. The defense, from the record, wanted to make hay and keep his person from the penitentiary a little longer, and so hoped to get the benefit of the state's untimely failure and get extra time to prepare, which means delay before sentencing. That's what the record shows. And then, as far as a mix-up, counsel and the defendant confer and come back and say, yes, they will go ahead on the state's first amended petition. And that is used throughout. In fact, it was defense counsel who pointed out the trial court's perhaps mix-up. I'm not going to say that Judge Wilson was confused ever, but there were lots of papers there. But it was not the judge and not the prosecutor, Ms. Guy, but the defense attorney who said, wait a minute, you said the second amended petition, and we were set on the first one. If you look at page 7 of the record, Mr. Johnston says, my understanding is that the court's saying is we're going on the first amended petition. That's not a mix-up. That's pretty clear. And the judge says, that's the one I set. And they go on, and there's discussion between counsel and his client, and the court calls the state versus Maddox on state's first amended petition to proceed to adjudication. That is clear. And then later, I think, well, actually, when the defendant was named, he responds to First Amendment petition, and later when Ms. Guy asks a question, she also refers to the First Amendment petition. Yeah, the record on that is clear. Now then, if you don't like the verbatim language that's used, look at what Judge Wilson did when she went through the pleas for this defendant, and she did so thoroughly on the record. What she asked for pleas of true or not true follows the chronology, the unique chronology, that is the same as the First Amendment petition. So that's what was litigated in this case. Now, when the judge hears a true plea on the THC dirty UA, and she takes that at first as she goes through the litany of them, and then she returns, and defense counsel has alleged some sort of ineffective assistance, and somehow this person didn't know what they were doing in this court. Now, we have someone who was facing 11 different allegations spread out over 5 alleged violations. There's 6 of the failure to reports by mail and 2 failure to reports by in person. So you've got 8 failure to reports, basically the easiest lay down violation the state can prove. This person is going to be adjudicated. That's beyond all reasonable doubt, but that's not the standard. We know the standard is only preponderance. But that's going to happen is a foregone conclusion. So, this person decides to plead true to one of the violations. And yes, while it's outside the record, but I'll take it since defense counsel said it, Judge Wilson is not known for being the most lenient. She obviously gave 7 years deferred on this originally, which sounds like a pretty good sentence, considering penalty group 1 cases. So, yes, they hoped for leniency. Now, this is a case where the true plea stands alone as far as supporting this adjudication. And that in and of itself should decide the case. We also have oodles of case law that proof of one violation is sufficient. And we have that too.
Can you jump to the remedy because you're about out of time?
Well,
as far as reformation and why we can do what you've suggested in your brief.
You can follow Brewer, which is a Court of Criminal Appeals case, which has a modification. And I've also given you a Dallas case where they recently did a modification. It's not unusual for different petitions to cause a mix-up or confusion. In this situation, though, it's clear which one they went on, and just let it recite what it was done. The same as a nunc-pro-tunc, the same as what should have been done at the trial court, and we wouldn't have had this entire appeal. So, actually, I believe, Judge Gardner, you did a modification in the end of August, completely different issue, not an adjudication, but this court issues modifications of judgments all the time, and they're routine. And that is certainly a remedy that makes common sense. It's funny because no remedy is spelled out in the defense brief in the section on this, but in the prayer they ask for the windfall of reversal. This is not a reversal case. It's clear from what Judge Wilson did, what she adjudicated was the First Amendment petition, and then the clerk filled in the paperwork later and got it wrong. That's all that happened.
And you don't believe that a reformation would require a new trial on punishment?
No.
Because I haven't read the record yet, but it's quite clear that the rendition of judgment on the record by Judge Wilson, she states clearly each count as being specifically not just labeled by count numbers, but she says what the violations are.
They're 1, 2, 4, and 5, yes.
Okay.
May I respond with one
yeah.
more? You know, this is not in my brief, but this issue dovetails with the case law that says an oral pronouncement on sentence is what controls. And that's not discussed in Brewer, that's not discussed in the Dallas case, but the history of that case law kind of goes together and dovetails. And it's the same thing here. So the oral controls, and that's been long been, I think Coffey was the Court of Criminal Appeals case from 10 years ago maybe. But,
thank you, Ms. Dehoney.
Thank you.
Ms. Dehoney. Mr. Clancy? Oh, okay. We never complain about counsel giving us time back. Thank you all for appearing here this morning to present your arguments. The case is submitted and you're excused. Thank you.